when I packed in football, I just thought I had nothing else to do, and I just decided to drink, and then all of a sudden I become an alcoholic.
It's sad sometimes, you know what I mean, because a lot of people don't prepare themselves, won't listen, and then when they retire, they just fall on very, very hard times.
Being a professional cricketer has been their ultimate dream, and when that comes to an end, or when it's nearing an end, no matter who that player is, it becomes very, very frightening.
It was nice to know that I was never actually going to be physically tired, which was nice, and you know, I didn't have to worry so much about what I was eating or having to go to bed early on a Friday night in preparation for a game. So in a way, it was quite liberating.
You can't be 20 on Sugar Mountain, though you're thinking that you're leaving there too soon. You're leaving there too soon.
Every day, sportsmen and women across the globe have to face the realities of their careers coming to an end. Whether it be through injury or age or poor performances or the lack of contracts, retirement is something that they all go through eventually. In the first part of this series, we considered the timing of sporting retirements, how some sportspeople find it difficult to let go, while others can't wait to leave their sporting ambitions behind them. This week, we'll be looking at some of the jobs retired sportsmen and women go on and do. What are the choices in front of them, and what support systems are available to guide them through the transition?
Though you're thinking that you're leaving there too soon.
But before that, they have to come to terms with the fact that they're no longer competing, no longer in the public eye for the very thing that first made them famous, no longer feeling that adrenaline rush from hearing their name chanted by thousands and thousands of people. Michael Bennett is an ex-footballer turned sports counsellor, and he says looking towards a new and fresh career can be the last thing on sports people's minds when their on-field careers come to a halt.
The main issue is drug and alcohol. The reason why these people turn to drug and alcohol is the realisation of they're now in Civvy Street, if you want to call it that. They're no longer in that cocoon of football that looks after you. My own experience is that, you know, booking a holiday, go to the club, they do it for you. Going to the dentist, go to the club, they do it for you. Even down to washing your car, you know, you get someone in to do it for you. All you need to do is turn up, train, play and go home. When you come to the end of your career, you're on your own. And I think some players or sports people will find that very difficult to come to terms with. And that's why I think in order to maintain the buzz that they're used to, they may drink or may take to alcohol or drugs just to enhance that buzz that is missing.
One man who famously suffered a series of personal traumas after his professional football career came to an end is the former England midfielder Paul Gascoigne. His addiction to alcohol, coupled by the very public breakup of his marriage and allegations of abuse, has kept him in the glare of a news-hungry British press. And the damage it's done has been clear for all to see.
I didn't wake up one day and say, right, I want to become an alcoholic. You know, some people are and some aren't, and unfortunately I am. And when I packed in football, I just thought I had nothing else to do, and I just decided to drink, and then all of a sudden I become an alcoholic. Just creeped up on us being an alcoholic. But after all, my life got easier when I accepted I was an alcoholic and I could work on other things as well in my life.
Gascoigne is now trying to rebuild his life through counselling and therapy. Another ex-sports star who's looking to the future after a difficult few years is Frank Bruno. Last week, we heard how Bruno, a former world heavyweight boxing champion, had suffered from mental illness. 3 years ago, he was taken by force to a mental hospital suffering from depression, and he admits that it was the climax of his boxing career which prompted his downward spiral.
There's a lot of pressure, you know what I mean? I'm divorced, retiring from boxing, not really seeing the kids too much, everything getting on top of you, you know what I mean? Being left on the house, a big house like that, I just went, you know? Couldn't make no excuses at all, just had too much pressure.
How much did you miss the boxing?
I missed it a lot. I missed the discipline of it. I missed the check mainly. But it's a very, very highly pressured sport, boxing. You know what I mean? It's a stress business. And I was glad when I got out of it, to be honest.
But you carried on training, didn't you? Because you still maintain your fitness.
Yeah, God, I still maintain. I stopped for a little bit because that's what I thought what gave me a little bit of the mental illness. And I stopped training. I was just getting so plenty of energy and couldn't keep still and whatever. So I started going back into the gym, you know what I mean? But I stopped for about a year and a half, and that was one of my worst moves, what I'd done. Because when you stop, man, you just get agitated and plenty of energy. You put on weight and you just start getting aggressive. So I was glad when I started back again.
And maintaining control of their physical shape is one way of hanging on to the disciplines of being in professional sport. Michael Bennett again.
Having retired 2 years ago, what I decided to do was have a year out of not having to eat the right foods, or not having to drink the right drinks, or not having to get on the scales every Friday to get weighed. I totally just decided to enjoy myself. But after that year, your body does balloon and you do feel uncomfortable. And because you're so used to training 20 years, you get back into that kind of mental state again where you think, you know what, I need to look after myself. I think what Frank's doing is, to some people, is very important, just to keep the mind sharp and keep the body ticking over. So I think it's very important.
Planning for the future is important for all sports stars. Perhaps even more vital, though, for cricketers who play seasonally. Although many top cricketing names go on to have a successful life after cricket, many behind the microphone, for example, thousands of others across the globe worry about life away from the sport. Even the current Australian captain, Ricky Ponting, is aware that in the near future, he'll have to think about life beyond cricket.
The scary thing about it for me is that right at the moment, I'm enjoying the game as much as I ever have. And in 5 or 6 years' time, I might still be enjoying it as much as I ever have as well. So it'll be just whether or not your body and your mind can keep up with the tempo of the game at that stage. But I think listening to people that have retired and moved on in the past, you know, with Steve and Mark Warren, they all have got to a point where they just know that they've probably had enough. You know, one thing I heard Stephen say, that the day that he got up and went to training and didn't think he could actually make himself a better player would be the time that he'd retire. So I'm sure that will happen to me at some stage, but hopefully not in the next couple of years.
What if you're not the captain of Australia? What if you're a cricketer playing in the seconds for an English county side? It's still as daunting, if not more so, to consider life after your sporting career. Heidi Coleman is the Performance Lifestyle Coordinator for the England and Wales Cricket Board and the English Professional Cricketers Association.
For some players, it's very, very difficult. You know, they've had the identity of being a professional sports person for much of their life, really. That's probably all that they've really focused on. Yes, they've done educational things and so on and so forth, but being a professional cricketer has been their ultimate dream. And when that comes to an end, or when it's nearing an end, no matter who that player is, it becomes very, very frightening. They may have responsibilities in terms of a family, a mortgage, and suddenly the realisation that they're going to have to continue to support that comes to light. But also, they've had the identity of being a professional cricketer, and that identity suddenly changes. And dealing with that change in identity is a real struggle for some players.
Like several other schemes run by sports bodies across the world, the Performance Lifestyle Programme, which Heidi Coleman coordinates for the ECB and PCA, helps to educate and stimulate players in professional cricket and throughout the academy systems at each county cricket club in England and Wales.
Often we are the first port of call for players if they're keen perhaps on getting back into education, or they want to kind of find out what they might do after the game and how they get into that particular career area. We're all trained careers counsellors, so that is one of the key things that we do with those players. We help them really to learn about themselves a little bit more so that they can identify what their strengths are, where their skills lie, and also what their interests are, because that will really help to channel them into particular areas that they might be interested in.
Here's Cairns again to Flintoff, taken on the pad. LBW Peel's got to be close. Yes, given by umpire Darrell Harper. Cairns has his third wicket.
What about for cricketers outside of England? Chris Cairns, the former New Zealand all-rounder, has only just retired. He says he'd subconsciously, at least, been thinking about the future for some time.
Yeah, I think that was part of it, you know, because, again, you have to acknowledge that there's opportunities in other areas. And, you know, I feel sorry for guys who played domestic cricket back home. Not so bad now because of the payments that have come into the game, which are a little better. They're to give the guys the ability to stay in the game a bit longer. But the guys who sort of get to, say, 27, 28, maybe looking to have a family, look to buy their first home, I mean, they have considerable financial obligations. And so they get to a bit of a borderline in their lives, which means, you know, do I continue playing, following a dream, or if a job offer comes up, which gives me security with my family. And that's the difficulty we have with the numbers game in New Zealand. You know, we just don't have the ability for players to be full-time professional if they're not playing for New Zealand. On the other hand, if they play for New Zealand, there is a decent lifestyle to be made. But domestically, it's very, very tough for the guys.
And then there are those cricketers who leave the game behind completely.
Well, it's actually no part of my life anymore, because I'm really involved in politics, and then I'm you know, involved in big projects like another hospital and also building a university. When it's a holiday to be with my boys, who've certainly got interested in cricket, sort of, it's just nice to have a holiday. But it's not really part of my life.
Imran Khan has chosen a career in politics, but as Heidi Coleman says, the options for other cricketers are endless.
More players than not do things that are totally detached from the cricketing environment. I mean, examples of things that I've done with players, graphic design, product design, physiotherapy, teaching, plumbing, carpentry, coaching, so really varied things. So there's never a definite route that you could say a player would want to go into. I'd say marketing is quite a big thing that a lot of players are keen on, and event management, but also banking, financial management, those types of things. So it's very, very different depending on who the player is, really.
And then there's always acting.
The Ugly Sisters? Oh no, we're not!
After I lost to Bone Crusher Smith and to Mike Tyson, I went into pantomime for about a couple of years to take my mind off it, because sometimes I just got a little bit stale, just burnt myself out a little bit. I needed a total rest. So Terry Lawless advised me to get involved in pantomime, because after you finish from boxing, you need something to maintain a decent living, something to keep yourself occupied, keep your body oiled, keep your mind, you know, I mean, stimulated, you know what I mean? So I got involved in pantomime for a little bit after the couple of defeats from, as I said, Bone Crusher Smith and Mike Tyson. And I went back into pantomime. Then I come back out of pantomime and went back into boxing. So it gave me a little break, because sometimes I was training. Pressure. Everything you'd done in the papers, everything was high tension. I had to find something to take the strain away, you know? But pantomime was good.
Such is the strong association between Frank Bruno and pantomime performances that many people even forget that he was a former world heavyweight boxing champion. Bruno, like other sports stars, including Vinnie Jones and David Ginola and Serena Williams, has taken to acting. But there are several other boxers who found it increasingly difficult to accept their careers in the ring are over.
It's sad sometimes, you know what I mean? Because a lot of people don't prepare themselves to, when they retire, once they're doing well, once the sport's rolling and the money's coming in, they don't get good advice. I had a good accountant earlier on to advise you how to put money and put money away and save money for a pension and that. But I feel sorry for a lot of boxers who are just ignorant. And then when they retire, they just fall on very, very hard times. You know? And it's very, very sad because they put a lot into their sport.
Frank Bruno, David Becker, Michael Schumacher, Tiger Woods, they're all household names. And financially, at least, they'd be able to survive outside of their sport. But what about the sportsmen and women who do the same amount of training and make the same sacrifices but aren't anywhere near as well known? Udo Onewere played football in the English lower leagues. He's made the transition from professional footballer to trainee solicitor.
Good afternoon, Thomas Edgar.
To be honest with you, it has been tough, but then again, I would say that I've enjoyed it because I've enjoyed the challenge of it, really. I always say a change is as good as a rest. I knew that going back into the books, it was going to be completely different to what I'd been doing before. I looked at it positively, and also it was nice to know that I was never actually going to be physically tired and I didn't have to worry so much about what I was eating or having to go to bed early on a Friday night in preparation for a game. So in a way, it was quite liberating.
But what about that adrenaline rush? I mean, you tell me that you earn your money by playing on a Saturday. What about that? Did you not miss that? Did you not miss that thrill of running out onto the pitch 3 o'clock on a Saturday afternoon?
Yeah, of course I did, and that's irreplaceable. And I think as soon as a footballer can come to terms with that, then he's able to move on. I think you see loads of situations where there are footballers who are constantly craving for that adrenaline and they say they replace it when they stop playing by going into gambling. Or I think as soon as you can come to terms with the fact that is irreplaceable, it's a moment in your life that's gone, then you can move on. And I think the people that can adapt to that quickest will be fine. And of course I miss it, but you know, I get my adrenaline rush now from, I don't know, maybe passing my exams or just enjoying family life, and maybe it was never going to be the same, but you know.
And do you think that being an ex-footballer was a help or a hindrance when you were trying to find firms to work for?
There's always preconceptions about what a footballer is like. everybody knows what they are when they hear David Beckham speak and all those sort of prejudices. But then again, I'd say it was a help because obviously my CV would stand out amongst the thousands of applications that they get. But I wanted to show that I wasn't just a footballer, I had other strings to my bow. And so I would probably say it was a bit of both.
Udo was given financial assistance and support from the English Professional Footballers Association. In tennis circles, there's the same kind of support, as the former Wimbledon champion Michael Stieck told me.
Well, there is a pension plan from the ATP Tour, which kicks in, I think, when you turn 48 or 50. But I was fortunate enough and lucky enough to have earned so much money that I don't have to worry about my financial future. So still, you have to keep it, not spend it, obviously, which a lot of other athletes unfortunately do. I mean, they waste it more or less instead of just preparing for the next 50 years, as we said. My father is a businessman. He always said, you know, you have to honor every single penny you earn. And just, you know, if you earn a penny, you can only spend a penny, not even. But if you only earn one, you can't spend two. So just always keep that in mind. And I was brought up very conservatively in that area, and it just helped me.
Stieck is now a familiar voice for viewers and listeners of tennis. He, like a number of other big names, has chosen the media to develop his future career. Other sports stars are only just thinking about what to do next. Peter Nicol, the former world number one squash player and current Commonwealth champion, has already announced that he'll be retiring after the World Championships in Cairo.
I am sad, but I'm also excited. There's a mixture of emotions. Yeah, I'm sad because it's going to be over and I love it, and I always have done. Even down to silly things like when you go to tournament, practice in the morning, come back, have some lunch, and then jump into bed and watch a movie and relax and fall asleep. It's just an idyllic lifestyle. But then in the evening, of course, you get up and play a brutally hard squash match and you have to rest in between. But I always remember that feeling, even now at 33-year-old, going to a hotel after practicing and jumping into bed, just feeling like a little boy, just being able to relax and do nothing until I'm ready to work.
Michael Bennett, who counsels sports stars, says being optimistic about the future will put them in good stead.
It's funny because I've only just now got to terms with when people ask what I do, and I say professional counsellor. 18 months after I finished playing, I was still saying I was a professional footballer because you just get used to that mindset. And it sounds good. And what I realised was at any one time, there can only be 3,000 professional footballers. It's a big thing to have. When you're not part of it, it's like being not part of a team. You're left out in the cold and you're isolated. It's very important to have a goal, using the football analogy, you know, goal. That's what we aim to do, to score a goal, to finish the job. And I think in order for us as players and as sports people to move on, I think it's important to have a goal.
And Udo Onwere says it's as competitive in the outside world as it is in the sporting arena. But that's what makes life beyond sports so exciting.
One of the things about playing professional sport that not a lot of people realise is that there are times where, you know, you're facing an opponent who is really fearful and you have a mechanism inside you that enables you to cope with that. And it's the same thing going into a new career. It's very scary to think to yourself, well, what am I going to do? You know, I've done this for 15, 20 years. I'm going to be left on my own. I don't know what to do. Once you can overcome that fear, I would always advise people just to go for it, have the courage of your own convictions, and you know, things will work out right as long as you prepare yourself and you work as hard as you can.
Life beyond sport can be the biggest challenge that even the most fiercest competitors find difficult to face. And letting go is a key part of the transitional process.
I just take a backward step now. When you've been in something for 25 years, you just want to take a backward step and just relax a little bit rather than being fully in boxing. But I watch it and I still fly the flag for boxing, but just taking a backward step. I'm retired, you know, just chilling, rather than getting involved in boxing deeply, you know.
And how long did it take you, Frank, to be able to say, I'm retired, without having that sort of pang?
I'm not too sure. Once you're retired, you're retired, you know what I mean? Your body feels, your mind feels that the hunger's not there no more. So when I retired, you know what I mean? You hear all the crazy rumours that I was going to come back and whatever, but that's only talk, you know what I mean? But once I retired, it was very difficult retiring, because a busy man, you know what I mean? Like, you're getting up in the morning, training in the afternoon, you're doing all different bits and pieces, meeting all different people, and then boom, it stops like that. It's very, very difficult for any sort of, like, boxer. You got to maintain the training, you got to look after yourself, because you can pile up so much weight I went through a state where I'm putting about 2.5 stone, you know what I mean? Just sitting around, lazing around. But now I get myself together and you go to the gym most days for 1.5 hours and get a good sweat on, go in the sauna and the steam room as well, and try and look after myself, eat sort of like the right foods, vitamin tablets and plenty of fresh air, you know? So when you retire, it's one of the most difficult things for anybody to retire, but you got to find something to do and, you know what I mean, maintain the busyness and keep yourself occupied, because, you know what I mean, when you retire and you just retire like that, your bones start aching, your mind starts going funny, you start wandering, you start thinking you're going crazy, you know?
There'll be new dreams, maybe better dreams, and plenty.
Frank Bruno suffered very publicly. Not only did he have to spend time in a mental hospital, he also had to face the humiliation of some hurtful press coverage around the time. But he's hoping that his personal difficulties since retirement will help other mental illness sufferers around the world seek help when they might not have done so before. And for him, that's one of his greatest achievements.
I tell you what, the most powerful thing, if you're not right, man, in your head, which I wasn't right in my head, and I mean, I was doing some odd things, and some people are so proud, some people are so ignorant, some people are so rock-headed that they won't go and get some help. But I tell you, if you've got a broken foot, you go to the doctors. If you've got a cold, flu, or something's wrong with you, you go to the hospital or the doctors. If you've got something wrong with your head, go to mental people to help you, because they're specialised in helping people that have nervous breakdowns. It's not a shame to have any sort of like nervous breakdown, because there's so many different ways that you can have a nervous breakdown and so many different ways it can be caused by. I can see why a lot of people got ego, pride, and they don't want to go there, because they put it down to, if you're mentally ill, you must be sick, you must be mad, you must be not right, you know what I mean? And no one wants to know about that, but that's not further from the truth, you know?
And your time you spent in hospital, did you learn things that perhaps you'd never seen before?
Yeah, I've learned quite a lot of different things. I learned never to go back there again.